Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Well, coming up on today's podcast, Ann Nicholson Weber interviews representatives from the Department of Cultural Affairs here in Chicago. They will be talking about what the city of Chicago provides for theater in the Chicago area. Also, we have an audio review of The Piano Tuner and, of course, Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax and get ready to talk some theater.
You're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I'm your host this week, Ann Nicholson Weber, and I'm here at the Cultural Center to talk today to three representatives from the Department of Cultural Affairs for the City of Chicago. Janet Carl Smith, who is the Deputy Commissioner for Cultural Programming, Julie Burrows, who is the Director of Cultural Planning, and Claire Gill Sutton, who is the Director of Theater for the Department of Cultural Affairs. Welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start with a very basic question, and this is for Janet. Why does the City of Chicago have a Department of Cultural Affairs?
Oh, that is a big question. Well, I think it's a recognition of the fact that the city looks at culture as one of its most important services and one of the factors that makes living in the city special. It's a recognition both of the fact that there is a cultural industry here and there's an economic impact that is created by focusing on cultural events and activities and the people who make culture in the city. And also it is an important part of making bringing people together in the city and also educating children.
Tomorrow's audiences.
Exactly.
What are the ways that the City of Chicago can promote the arts and can help to have a healthy arts scene in general and theater in particular?
We have sort of a twofold mission in a lot of what we do in the Department of Cultural Affairs. First of all, we do a lot of direct programming, and we're unusual in the country because of that. This means that we provide a lot of opportunities for arts organizations and artists, and we also provide opportunities for the public to experience high-quality arts for free in a very accessible setting, and whether that setting is here at the Chicago Cultural Center, in Millennium Park, at the City Gallery, at Clark House, one of our venues in the city. Another part of the mission really is to support the artists and arts organizations that really create the fabric of the city through their work. The other thing that makes us, I think, somewhat unique and gives us a really important opportunity to showcase the arts and really promote the importance of the arts in the city is the fact that we're the only Department of Cultural Affairs in the country that has its Office of Tourism as part of the Department of Cultural Affairs. So we have this sort of two-sided entity where we are able to create the product and also promote it. And it's very important to us to think about theater is being a part of that for a couple of very pragmatic reasons. One is that there are a lot of theater companies in the city and there are a lot of theater artists. Theaters take place in venues where you can get a return audience. They tend to operate under longer runs, so you can help build that audience. And it's something you can say to people who are looking to travel to the city or who just are looking for alternatives to other kinds of leisure time activities in the city, and that is you can go to the theater here any night of the week in just about every neighborhood. And so it's really important to maintain that kind of visibility for theater.
And we'll turn to the producing piece that you were just talking about in one second, but what are the ways that you have to
to get the word out? I mean, you're talking about bringing tourists to, you know, to shows in neighborhoods and so forth. How is someone who comes here from Indianapolis going to go through the city and end up at a show in Andersonville?
Well, as a matter of fact, today is a very interesting day for us because one of our facilities, the Visitor Information Center, the Tourism Center, just helped to inaugurate the first online ticketing system for HotTix, which the League of Chicago Theater does. And so we are able now to promote the fact that you can buy tickets online. If you're sitting in Iowa City and you are interested in coming to Chicago the next weekend to go to the theater. So basically what our tourism office is able to do is to support the initiatives that are created by the community. And I think that that's one of our most important roles. We also do put together broader initiatives where we invite the community to participate by doing programming that gets added to the programming that we do and gets promoted as a package.
Can you give a concrete example of that?
Well, we have talked about doing sort of a theater month. I will tell you about an example that really comes from a different art form, and that is the Chicago Artist Month promotion that we do every year. Every October, we invite the visual arts community to do things to showcase Chicago artists, visual artists, and then we promote that, and we invite people to come, and we make it very accessible for them. And so that's the kind of way that we pull things together.
Another example is a couple years ago, our summer tourism theme was the culinary arts, stirring things up in Chicago. And as part of that, we did a series of plays about food and culinary things. It was called Play With Your Food. And we basically invited theater companies who had done plays that had a food content as a central theme. We asked them to remount them in limited runs. And some of them were done in restaurants with several courses served as part of the performance. And it really celebrated the intersection between the culinary arts and the theater arts. And so that was a way of kind of integrating the two in a way that was kind of unexpected. But we found very fertile field for theater that explored culinary themes. Everybody loves to eat, and so it seemed kind of universal.
It comes up. And how do you reach out to theaters when you have an opportunity like that? How does a theater come to know about it?
Well, we often work with our wonderful partner, the League of Chicago Theaters, on getting the word out to the theater community, but we also use our own sort of web channels. We have a great DCA Theater website where we'll put out the call for entries, and then we do lots of personal one-on-one reaching out. We all see a tremendous amount of theater, and so we try to keep up with who's doing what and what's going on, and really when we're not getting the responses, we might just hit the phones and start to call everyone we know who might be interested.
And one thing I was going to add to that, too, is that we have a very comprehensive grants program, too. So we have lots of grantees who are theaters, and that's a way to get to know those groups very well.
Well, that brings me to a quote of yours, which I found intriguing. You said, "Every funder has an agenda." And I'm curious to know how you would characterize the city's agenda as a funder.
Well, we actually are one of the few funders in the city that gives what are referred to as general operating grants. And that is a lot of our emphasis. It's to give money to small, mid-sized, and large arts organizations to do the work they want to do. That is done really through our City Arts Grants program, which is our most pervasive program, really. But it's basically saying, if you're able to complete this application, you really know what you're doing, we'll give you money to support you.
Just to be who you already are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're not going to make you go through hoops. We do have an opportunity for groups that are very small, that haven't even gotten to the point where they have a 501c3 status as a not-for-profit, to come in and get small amounts of money from us so that they can get that kind of status. They can do the paperwork, get the lawyer to help them become not-for-profit so they can start to grow as well.
Well, Claire, I know your role is the production side, at least that's one of the things you do. And maybe you could talk a little bit about the City of Chicago's own theaters and what you do there and what your goal is.
Sure. I think the main mission of our theaters, we have two small 99-seat theaters at the end of the theater district, so right near Randolph and Michigan. We have the storefront theater and the studio theater that is dedicated to showcase the smaller itinerant theater companies. So it's the theater companies that are producing works in the neighborhoods. We try to bring them downtown and expose them to a different audience, expose them to funders, and also give them the kudos of performing with the city and, you know, exposing them to our staff so that in the future they will be thought of for other programs. Press people tend to come to our spaces, so they do get some great coverage with press, and that's our main focus, is really bringing in those companies from the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. And that puts you in an interesting role, I would think, because you become a little bit like a good housekeeping seal of approval, and I'm interested how you know, as the city of Chicago, it seems like you have to be fair, but you also have to exercise taste somehow in making those decisions. How do you go about that?
Well, we, as Julie said, we have a team of staff and community members that are out seeing theater companies. We have our website, which is www.dcatheater.org, and we ask everybody to go on that website to see our mission, so that it's a proposal basis. Our proposals are due on May 18th of this year, if anyone's interested in submitting a proposal. And the committee goes through every single proposal, and we make a decision by the group. What piece would be good? Which space it will be great with? And our ultimate goal is to incubate these theater companies so that they will come and become the next Steppenwolf, will become the next Goodman Theaters.
Is it always a remount of a show they've done, or can they put something up for the first time in one of your spaces?
It's never a remount.
Okay.
We encourage new works because we think that Chicago is the town where theater companies try out all this great new work, and that's what we want to see, particularly at the other end of the theater district. It's that new avant-garde work that people can see, and then if they really love it, they can go into the neighborhoods and follow these small companies around. So we're looking for new works that they can really kind of flex their muscles with, because the space, we give the space for free, and we help market and promote the event, and hopefully they'll take it on and create great works and established theater companies around the city.
They can really take risks because the stakes are not as high financially for them.
Absolutely.
Right.
Although we would like everyone to have a full house, I think the biggest part is to incubate that company, expose them to marketing, PR, help them bring in funders, and really use all of the resources for the department, be it the Office of Tours and Promotions, our grants department. Julie Burroughs helps them once they've established themselves to find homes. So we feel like we find them and help them come to become a very established permanent theater company.
Do you have any success stories in particular that you like to?
My favorite success story is the Silk Roads Theater Project. They started here in the studio theater, and within 4 years, they are now an established theater company right down the street from us with a beautiful theater. And Julie helped to secure that space. But of all of our success stories, it's amazing that those guys are producing critically acclaimed works, and they started here at the Cultural Center.
Now, I wouldn't think that the typical audience member who comes to the Loop to see Wicked is also likely to buy a ticket to the kind of avant-garde, experimental, risk-taking work that you're talking about. Is that wrong?
Yeah, I hope that's wrong. I think the great thing about our theaters is that the ticket prices are $20 or less. So if you are bringing out your family or bringing a large group of friends, it's extremely accessible. And I feel like anyone that's going to a Wicked show is open to theater. And it's Wicked is such a beautiful show that, you know, hopefully it will expand them and they'll be like, oh, I might go to the other side of the theater district and see what that the new creative pieces that potentially in the future will become Wicked.
Right. Do you know who your audiences are for those spaces?
Our audiences tend to be, it depends on what kind of shows. We do such a huge spectrum of shows. We have Shaw Chicago in our spaces. They do concert readings and they attract the 50 and older crowd. And we have done companies like 500 Clown, which attracts a very young, hip audience. So it's impossible for our marketing department because every show has that unique.
You can't build an identity
right,
that way.
Right.
Is it tourists or is it Chicago natives or?
Well, the great thing about having Office of Tourism located right near our theater spaces is that tourists come in and they're like, we want to see some great theater. We've heard Chicago has some great small theater companies, and they can just walk across the street, buy a ticket, and they have their entire evening sort of set. So we do get tourists. We get people from businesses that like to stay downtown before going out to the suburbs, families. It's all over the map, which is so exciting.
So we've talked about the city's work as a producer and as a promoter. And then there's another piece of this that you've laid out for me, which is Julie's role as ombudsman between the city government and licensing and those kind of hoops that theater companies have to go through and the theater community. So maybe, Julie, you could talk a little bit about that piece of it.
Yeah, I do a really wide variety of technical assistance directly to theater companies and the theater community. They will come to me mostly starting out that they have a space issue. Either they're looking at creating a space and don't know where to start, or they've started and they're stuck, or they're looking to make a move and grow and change, and they're looking for help in understanding sort of the city regulations, what are some of the city programs or incentives where they can get assistance, and really how to work best with the city to realize their goals space-wise. So that could include the public place of amusement license, and that's changed greatly over the last couple of years. It used to be the Department of Revenue. They split in two. We have a new theater license. It gets very confusing and very complicated for people whose core business is theater, not licensing and business issues. So I help to kind of demystify and clarify and translate kind of between government speak and business speak and kind of translate it into language that the typical theater professional can really understand and then run with.
Artists speak. Quite a different language.
It is. It literally, they are different languages. And especially, I think, government agencies who have a regulatory function are used to speaking to the professionals that they're always speaking to, whether it's a building professional or someone who is an expediter who really kind of knows the lingo and knows the forms and knows which line to stand in. For someone who's coming through and only will ever have to do it once, hopefully, they've got to reinvent the wheel and figure it all out. And it really does defy figuring out. I mean, you do, I think, really need someone to explain what is zoning, why should I care, why is it tripping me up,
and so you're
those
a hand
kinds
holder.
Of things. Sometimes I'm a hand holder. Sometimes I'm the reality check. And sometimes we really can forge new ground. I think we've had a huge amount of success with in recently city government is really changing in terms of new technology. They're much more customer friendly. And all these changes in sort of the structure of departments of city government, they've just been very receptive to acknowledging that the theater world and the arts, they have different needs than the typical businesses,
right.
And that it's appropriate and necessary to sometimes change how business is done as usual to accommodate how the arts world really is different from everybody else.
And there has to be that commitment to make it easier. You have to believe that it matters that arts flourish.
Well, we really are blessed with the most supportive leadership at the very top. I mean, Mayor Daley could not be more supportive of the arts. He really believes that they make neighborhoods vital, that it makes Chicago a great place to visit and work. And really, if you look at the industry here, we are like the theater talent research and development incubator for the whole country. You know, all the comedy writers go to New York. We have actors who go to both coasts. We have filmmakers who start here. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our more developed talent leaves Chicago, but we're really an R&D center, I think, in the theater world for sure.
Well, it's interesting you raised that because that was going to be one of my questions, which is one lament that one hears if you spend time in the theater world is that there isn't enough work of the kind that actors particularly typically use to supplement their incomes, which is film, advertising, voiceover, so forth. And that's one of the reasons people leave for the coasts once they've kind of established themselves as a talent here, which does seem too bad from the point of view of someone who lives here and wants them to stay. Is that a problem that the city has a role in addressing?
Well, we found that this issue really cuts across every single arts discipline, that the pay scale for every single kind of creative endeavor is incredibly low, especially in the nonprofit sector. And there's a huge number of issues that relate to that. So, yeah, a lot of creative people have to find other jobs to supplement their income. One of the main ways we are trying to help people to help themselves is technical assistance programs. Every year, for the past 4 years, we've had the Creative Chicago Expo. It's April 21st. It's at the Cultural Center all day. It's free. And we're really trying to help creative individual practitioners understand what they need to know to make a living doing their creative endeavor. So we have workshops and vendors, help them understand that they could buy a house, that they could really flourish as a creative person. The other end of it is we are trying to make Chicago a place where you can flourish through every stage of your life as a creative person, that you could stay here and raise a family and make a living. This is a little bit harder. It, again, cuts across all of the arts disciplines where there's this sense that until you've left Chicago, you haven't really made it. It's a big sensibility among fashion designers, among painters, among recording, you know, music artists, among theater people, filmmakers. There is that second city status, you know, where people feel like they have to leave to make it really big. I think we're starting to prove that you can come back home and thrive, that you can really make it big here and stay in Chicago.
We don't have a celebrity sensibility, and that's for better and for worse, I think. It's one of the things that I think makes it harder to be an artist because there isn't really ever going to be stardom if you stay here. But I've heard many theater artists talk about how that sensibility also promotes a certain kind of artistry, risk-taking. Your whole career is not on the line. You can just fail and go on and keep working. And there's a kind of collaborative, friendly culture, which I think is quite different from the coast, from New York, speaking about theater. So it's a good and a bad thing. I personally am interested in having audiences develop relationships with individual artists here, and I feel like that's something that isn't so much part of the press culture here and isn't so much part of the culture in general and maybe could be without losing some of what's great about our theater culture.
I think one of the things, too, to keep in mind is that the arts are becoming more global generally. And so people are moving around or they may be located one place, but they have exhibitions somewhere else, they're touring somewhere else, and then they come back. It's what they see as a creative home, perhaps, too. Just being this morning at the press event to welcome the cast for The Color Purple, you know, the director is a Chicagoan, Felicia Fields, who's one of the stars, is a Chicagoan. They went to New York to do the show, and now they're coming home, and they both spoke about how this was important to them. So I think that that's another thing that we're seeing, that the creative culture is as with you know, the podcasts you're doing, people are tuning in from other countries or other states because they're interested. That's the way people are looking, I think, at their work as well.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the new media are kind of changing the landscape entirely for everybody and the arts in general. Well, what are some of the challenges or problems that any either of you three think about as being on the horizon for theater artists or for the theater community in Chicago?
I'd say one of the key questions that keeps coming up is, what role should the funding community play in either encouraging organizations to get created and, you know, encouraging them also to admit when it's over? You know, there's an old story in Chicago that anytime you get four actors sitting around a table, you've got a new theater company. And there is this wonderful kind of energy that comes from that. But then what will happen lots of times is one person decides to move to California and try to make it in the movies. Another, you know, one has to provide for a family, and all of a sudden things are changing. And the question is, how do you create opportunities for that kind of creative talent to come to the fore, develop to a certain amount without feeling like they need to go down the road of all of those things that becoming an institution involves, like raising money, getting space, learning all these other kinds of things. And to me, that's really a key question. I think that's one of the things that, you know, our theater venues address. Julie's, you know, Dose of Reality work with some of these groups addresses too.
So you're saying that we don't need an infinite number of companies. We need a way for actors and artists to move among them, to find a home without necessarily starting their own. Is that?
I think we need to have those supports that help to provide for that so that people can, you know, be flexible about it.
Are there models for programs in other cities that any of you have been looking at with interest for ways that city government can be engaged with the theater community? Or are we the best? Nobody's doing anything better than we are.
We like to think that we establish the models.
And people look at us for those ideas.
And I think what you said earlier in terms of the sense of collaboration, I mean, certainly to have something like the League of Chicago Theaters, but that is a piece of the theater world. There are all of these other kinds of groups, too, that aren't even at the stage where they would have the money to be, you know. And it is a sense that among the artists they collaborate, among the organizations they collaborate, we collaborate with them, and that's an important piece of it too.
I know there was recently a quite impressive study of the economic effects that Broadway in Chicago has had on the city, bringing dollars into the economy. I wonder if any similar study has been done that relates to the indigenous companies, the smaller companies in Chicago, or if you do anything to track the economic effects of theater in Chicago.
Well, the League of Chicago Theaters did do an economic impact study of theaters all throughout Chicago. And we've looked really closely at how to measure the impact of a facility on a neighborhood. We're still working on that with the University of Chicago public policy program to really figure out how to measure that, and then how to help theater companies to measure their own impact so that they can really tell their story about what they're doing. But I think it's always important to go beyond dollars and cents and to look at what's the impact of you going to the theater and really enjoying a show. And I think that you can get that great experience downtown, but you can also get it in 200 different theaters close to home or in a different neighborhood where you've never been before. And to me, That's the real impact. I mean, dollars and cents are great. Economic development is great. Real estate anchors in an emerging neighborhood are really great. That's what I do. But truthfully, touching people's hearts and minds through theater, and that's why you keep going. And that's why I think all of us are so dedicated towards keeping theater in Chicago alive and robust and vital.
Well, that certainly echoes my own sentiments and ours at Theater in Chicago. One of our goals is to make information about some of the less well-known companies available. And I know that you're doing similar work by producing some of the smaller, younger companies and by providing information to people coming into the city about them. So thank you so much for talking to me about this. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It's been a joy.
Hello, Chicago. Welcome to another enjoyable episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of March 5th. 2007. The final casting has been announced for the Chicago premiere of The Color Purple. That's right, Oprah Winfrey and Scott Sanders, who are the producing team of the Broadway smash hit The Color Purple, have announced the cast for the North American tour, which will see its premiere on April 17th at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Now, some of the big news is that the stars of the Broadway production, including Jeanette Baerdel, Felicia Fields, and Michelle Williams of Destiny Child's fame will be a part of the cast. Other members of the cast include Latoya London from American Idol fame, Stu James, Stephanie St. James, Rufus Bonds Jr., Lynette Dupree, Kimberly Ann Harris, and Virginia Ann Woodruff. The Color Purple, which was nominated for 11 Tony Awards, including the Best Musical, opened on December 1st of last year at the Broadway Theater and is based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Alice Walker and, of course, the infamous film by Steven Spielberg. For more information on the premiere of The Color Purple in Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater on April 17th, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. The Irish classic Riverdance will be returning to Chicago on April 3rd for a limited two-week engagement at the Auditorium Theater. Riverdance, which is a thunderous celebration of joyful music, song, and dance, has literally been enjoyed by millions of people all around the world. Riverdance had its world premiere at the Point Theatre in Dublin, Ireland, back in February of 1995, and have since then, listen to this, has played over 9,000 performances, has been seen by over 19 million people in 32 countries, and has played over 276 venues across four continents. Oh, and let's not forget their television audience of over 1.75 billion, I repeat, billion audience members. And that phenomenon is coming here. So Riverdance will be returning to Chicago for its two-week limited engagement on April 3rd at the Auditorium Theater. For more information on the times and ticket prices, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Uma Productions has announced that its March Hair fundraiser will be on Thursday, March 29th at the Adobo Grill in Wicker Park. This is Uma's fourth annual March Hair fundraiser, and it of course includes music, drinks, a little bit of gambling, and of course silent auctions. Uma Productions uses this fundraiser to receive a substantial portion of the funds that they need throughout the year, so get on over to the 4th annual March Hair Fundraiser by Uma Productions at the Adobo Grill in Wicker Park. For more information, stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News Podcast. Well, the Tribune Stage Ticker is reporting that Adam Rapp's Red Light Winter, which did, of course, premiere at the Steppenwolf Theater and shortly thereafter moved over to New York, may see an appearance up on the big screen. There is no official word yet, but the Stage Ticker is reporting that Scott Rudin is set to be the producer. But what we can expect is for Steppenwolf to announce its 2007-2008 subscription season today, which, of course, is Monday, March 5th. Don't forget to check out our website, Talk Theater in Chicago, to find out what the next season is for Steppenwolf. Well, thank you very much for listening to this enjoyable episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare quote of the week. And the following quote comes from Timon of Athens, Act 1, Scene 2. He's the very soul of bounty. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
You are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast, The Piano Tuner, directed by Jonathan Berry at Lifeline Theater. Review by Tom Williams. James E. Grote and Lifeline Theater have mounted an impressive production of Daniel Mason's novel, The Piano Tuner. Lifeline Theater specializes in adapting novels into terrific stage plays, and this superb show is a most compelling example of the talents and dedication of the ensemble at Lifeline Theater. They have this niche down pat. Patrick Blasthill is outstanding as Edgar Drake, the piano tuner. He is the timid Victorian Londoner who is recruited by the British War Office to travel to Burma to tune a piano owned by an influential British Army officer, instrumental in establishing peace in a lawless section of Burma, where England is determined to control as an addition to their empire. Drake's journey, both physically and metaphorically, is a vast journey that takes him from England to the continent through the Suez Canal and the Red Sea toward India and on to Burma. Lifeline's vivid set and the amazingly talented ensemble made Drake's journey an engrossing pleasure to experience. Shol Milos, Fazia Mirza, Yash Hayasi, Eric Martik, and Danny Bernardo were all marvelous in multiple roles that necessitate an assortment of accents, including British, Indian, and Burmese, among others. This quick-changing ensemble definitely took Drake and the audience into the exotic world of the Far East in 1866. This mysterious journey finds Drake emerging from the shy mechanic to an idealistic, self-fulfilled adventurer. This tale has Drake meeting the charismatic British doctor-soldier Anthony Carroll, who runs a medical clinic that helps unite the warring tribes in rural Burma. Kurt Ehrman is commanding as the mysterious British officer. Carroll uses the piano as a peace symbol to impress the natives. Drake becomes intoxicated with the charms and customs of the Far East. He realizes that the only chance for peace in the jungle lies in the power of music. We see Drake emerge into a most confident and idealistic person. We enjoy his adventures as this ambitious production grabs us at the start and carries us vicariously into Drake's journey. Patrick Blasthill and Kurt Ehrman anchor the saga with their nuanced performances. I enjoyed the show, and my friend observed that Grote's adaptation was true to Mason's novel. This is a strong dramatic work with excellent ensemble performances on an innovative set. A wonderful time awaits you and yours. I give this a highly recommended. The Piano Tuner, based on the novel by Daniel Mason, directed by Jonathan Berry at Lifeline Theater, located at 6912 North Glenwood Avenue in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, call 773-761-4477. Now running through March 25th.
Well, thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank the Department of Cultural Affairs for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson-Weber and Mark Meyer, without whom this podcast would not be possible. And also, of course, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.